Hi, and welcome to The Front Porch. We have a very special guest here today. It's Bob Aaron, longtime veteran reporter for WCHS television here in Charleston. We're going to talk about the disturbing slaying of two journalists across the border in Virginia and what that means for reporting in Appalachia in West Virginia. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
It's good to be here, Scott.
I'm joined, as always, by Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee and Lori Lynn of the Charleston Daily Mail editorial page. Hey, guys. Thanks for coming.
Hey, thanks.
All right, Bob, let's just dive right into it. You've had some experiences, one fairly recently, where you've been attacked out in the field. Can you talk about that?
I was in Clay County last summer, and I was checking into a story. We received an allegation that there might be some horses, mules, and donkeys that might be starving on a farm. I stopped in the middle of the road in front of this farm, and I started to take some video, and the son of the gentleman that owned the farm came out and confronted me, and it got pretty nasty, and he actually picked up the tripod that I was using and swung it at me, did about $3,000 damage to the camera and equipment. I got hurt, ended up going to the emergency room. He got charged with multiple crimes and eventually pled guilty to felony destruction of property. He's just, I believe, now finishing up a 3 months home confinement sentence, and he has another 4 years probation to go and has to make restitution to the station for the damaged equipment. But it was a frightening experience in a way. I sort of decided I wasn't going to get out of the road. I was on public property. I had a couple of second thoughts when I saw the guy was about 100 pounds heavier than me. And we got into it pretty good. And it would have really been easy to get hurt. I'm just lucky the fellow wasn't a person that had a gun or had a propensity to use it. And I had really only had one other incident in my career, and I've been at this for a while. I've been at Channel 8 33 years in August, and I've been doing this at least part of the time since about 1965. So I worked in Iowa. I was the Waterloo Bureau Chief for KCRG, and I heard a call about a barricaded suspect in a mobile home park in a small county just north of Waterloo. I rolled up, and there was a man in there holding his wife with a high-powered rifle, and his two brothers jumped me, and I actually got in a fight with one of them. There were several deputy sheriffs there. It was kind of one of these hockey fights. It was winter, and it was icy, and it was really slick, and we really weren't doing too much. We were sort of wrestling around. I still had a hold of the camera, which was a Bell DR80, which was a spring-driven film camera. This is a while back. And I was debating whether I was going to try and hit the guy over the head with it because they're pretty much indestructible. You can drop them out of a plane. But I was amazed that nobody was helping me. And finally, a state trooper came in, a highway patrolman came in and pulled this guy off of me. And the sheriff never charged him. And it turned out that they had had issues with the station before about a reporting of a homicide case. They felt that the station had released information early that had jeopardized their investigation. And everybody was perfectly happy to let this guy beat me up while I was out there doing my job. So it's not much fun. And but you expect it sometimes in those kind of situations, you know, a volatile labor dispute, a crime going on, riotous situation in a neighborhood or something like that. But this case down in Virginia, I mean, it was just a cold-blooded murder. He was obviously looking to kill his former co-worker. I did look at the video online that he had taken, and you see him come up, aim the gun at them. They obviously don't see him. The photographer is looking off to the right, doing a story about whatever innocuous thing they were doing at 6 o'clock in the morning. So that's a lot different. But the troubling thing about this is maybe this is the first shooting of its kind, like Columbine was the first shooting of its kind, and you always wonder if some nut job will decide to take advantage of this situation and do something someplace else. Chance of it happening here, pretty minuscule, but Roanoke, Virginia is kind of not a place where you would expect trouble either.
I'm wondering about the Clay County incident. How did you handle that as far as actually reporting on it? Did that make it onto the air in any way?
It made it onto the air, but I didn't do the story. They actually ended up interviewing me for the story. I had pretty much lost my objectivity, and I don't think we ever got around to looking into the issue with the animals.
So the story was the attack on you.
The story became the attack on me and not that. And I really don't know still to this day whether there was a problem there or not. I could see from 75 feet away that some of them were obviously underweight. So
in a way, he was successful in preventing you from reporting on his animals.
That's correct. So I don't, or his father's animals.
Mm-hmm. If I was guessing where violence would take place, I think I would predict, just someone who's lived here, rural, isolated setting where people feel like someone's looking at their business and stuff. But, I mean, I've seen there are places you can drive near here where there's graffiti written on the wall, you know, stay away from here, don't mind your own business and things like that, where you can tell there are people on edge.
And we've done, and Bob, we've done some stories here about people from outside of the region who come in and get in trouble taking pictures from legal places. But, you know, here's someone that's recognizable in the community. People know who you are, know you're from here. And yet you still run into some of these issues where people just don't want you there, right?
That's correct. I had an incident once down in right on the Logan Boone County line where they'd had I can't remember whether it was a murder or it was some kind of serious crime that occurred. And the relatives were throwing rocks at me, but their aim was pretty bad. So it didn't become an issue.
Is this something that's only in we talk about West Virginia thing and up a hall or someplace. But I also remember during a police shooting in St. Petersburg, Florida, when I was there in a black community, there were a lot of people that were getting very angry at the news media for coming and covering that. So is this just something that's a West Virginia phenomenon, or is it in other places as well where people get upset at the media for covering something?
No, I think it's all over the country, and you can't always figure out what will happen. Probably one of the most violent things I've ever seen was during the one of the coal strikes. They had a situation in a place called Rum Creek, where
I was there.
Where in order for
are
the
throwing rocks, Rick?
You were the troublemakers, Rick.
In order for the coal trucks to get to the preparation plant, they had to travel across a public highway, and then they had to go across a low water bridge. The miners and the strikers took their stand on that bridge. The state police are there. The U.S. Marshals are there enforcing a court order. So the state police are standing back. The marshals go onto the property to clear these pickets off. What had happened that day, someone had gotten the idea to take a steel cable and chain a car on there. These coal trucks would go through with battering rams that looked something like Elliot Ness in Prohibition, and they would knock people's cars in the creek. They would knock them sideways. The pickets would climb up on the trucks, and they would rip the mirrors off the trucks. So I'm kind of out there in the middle of this shooting this, and a marshal knocks over a lady. I don't know if she made it a little bit more dramatic than it was probably, but she starts screaming, "Oh my God." And you can see the mood of the crowd here is really getting bad. And I'm thinking, I might get hurt here. But instead, they pushed me up to the front so I could get good video of what was going on. And everything was fine. And eventually the police came out and helped the marshals, and they arrested one guy. The gentleman that they arrested was the father of a man who was later arrested for killing a man that crossed a Union picket line.
Just to circle back, I was at Rum Creek that day when that happened. I think I know the woman who got pushed down. And they used to tease me, my labor friends, because I like Bob Dylan. And I suggested that day maybe we put on a loudspeaker just to cool everything out. And the guy said it might hurt some of our own people. We can't do that.
So you expect something like that maybe in a situation like that, or you get out into a neighborhood where there's a big crowd gathering around and they get hostile with the police because, A, they don't like them, or B, well, these people's bodies have been laying out here for so long. How long are you going to let that happen? I mean, it can just take two or three people to turn that kind of situation around, and you kind of hope you can avoid it. So, you know, ideally, you want to be like a fly on the wall and just kind of be there and observing. But sometimes you can get caught up in the middle of it.
So what's scary about this particular shooting in Virginia is that it wasn't one of those situations. It was innocuous. And how does that affect what you're going to do as a reporter and what your station is going to do in order to deal with this situation?
Well, we had a couple of people come in and talk to us. Sergeant Brian Humphreys from the Sheriff's Department, and we had a chaplain come in from the paramedics about the emotional stress of this kind of thing, just in case anything was bothering us. And I think they went around to the commercial stations, and they told us we should probably think about increasing our situational awareness, not just when we're out in the field doing a live shot, But we're a little bit different from newspaper reporters in that we're more recognizable. I mean, they might recognize you from your picture in the box by the article, but we're on TV, and you know, you can have a confrontation with somebody in a place where you don't expect it. They even suggested that the photographers perhaps carry an emergency trauma kit, just a couple of things to stop major bleeding, something small enough that you could carry it in your camera bag, because you could have had an ambulance 100 yards away from those folks after they got shot and they would have never been able to get to it. They said, you know, fight back if you have to. If you have awareness 5 seconds after you get seriously hurt, you probably got an 80% chance you might be able to survive that. But you're going to have to start to do something. You're going to have to get out of the car wreck. You're going to have to apply a tourniquet. You're going to have to do something to take care of yourself. And I really didn't think a lot about that until then. And in the conversations in the newsroom, it was Kenny Bass, one of our reporters, who brought this up, was that this is the first incident of this kind. And there might be copycats, you know, remote that it would really that would be us. But someplace something like this might happen, because before Columbine, you really didn't have school shootings. And look how many school shootings we've had over the course of the time since then. They're still, in terms of the number of schools, rare and unusual, but we've had them.
So it almost sounds like a terrorist situation. It is one, I guess, where what was at one point, you knew that there were dangers in this job, but you could kind of guess what was a dangerous situation. Now it's almost like you're in a war zone. Anytime could be a dangerous situation. You won't know. If someone could be shot dead doing a stand-up with a Chamber of Commerce, then there's really no time when there's downtime.
No, and it didn't escalate to the point of violence, but you know, I've had threats before where, like, driving up on an accident, and that's my wife, that's my brother, you can't shoot that, you know, mm-hmm. and that type of a reaction. And other times it's more directed. I think it was the day this happened, I was on a raid, and a guy threatened me when I videoed him when he got arrested. So it's just it's a strange situation out there now, and it's I think this has maybe changed the game a little bit, but this was a targeted shooting. You know, there was nothing random about this.
One thing that always strikes me is how unaware people are of the legality of people taking pictures, you know, in public spaces. Many people seem to believe that, in fact, you know, you have no legal right to film me or to take my picture, when in fact, you know, generally you do out in public. Do you think that's part of the problem? People say you have no right to take a picture of my family.
I think that is. I don't think people recognize that if you can see something basically from a public viewpoint, you can take it. You can't zoom in through somebody's bedroom window, but you can video what you see. And I think that is generally a
problem.
And
law enforcement is also sometimes not really up on the law of that, and will prevent people from taking pictures in situations when they actually legally have the right to as well.
You see that a lot, actually, and a lot of times it would be better if they just told you what they didn't want you to shoot, because you're probably not going to shoot it anyhow. Mm-hmm. We're not going to take pictures of an uncovered, dead, drowning victim naked being loaded in an ambulance. We're not going to use that video. They don't have to tell us not to do that. Sometimes in the effort to prevent you from showing something, they force you to show it. You get moved back so far that the video shot encompasses the whole scene, and you can't cut out really what people don't want showing. You know, you just kind of have to use common sense, and you certainly don't want to get in a fight with the father of some little child that's been killed in an accident because you're taking pictures there. And you know, you try and be tasteful and understanding. And frankly, a request goes a lot further with me than somebody telling me I can't do it.
Mm-hmm. What have you learned over the years about how to deal with sensitive situations? What do you do to make sure that you're not being intrusive?
I try and talk to people first before I break out the camera sometimes, especially if it's family members and so on like that, and you're in a situation like that. And, you know, we have to be mindful of trespassing, and a lot of times we have to ask permission to go into places. I've agreed to do some things, like not show certain things under certain circumstances, and I don't know if I might have given up some of my journalistic rights to do that, but sometimes common sense has to prevail, and you certainly don't want to get into a dispute about doing something that you're not going to use. And we've had a couple of the younger photographers have had issues with fire departments and things like that when they first got on here, where they absolutely insisted on taking pictures of things that we can't air anyhow. We don't want to take stuff that we can't use. We want to try and be as sensitive as we can. We're actually moving away from showing bodies at all, even when they're covered up. But sometimes that's difficult to do. It depends on what the story is.
Well, Bob, as you said, you've been doing this off and on for 50 years. What's kept you at it for all these years?
I guess I like to be where the action is. I like to be out on the street. I've done administrative jobs before. I've been an assignment editor, news operations manager. I just kind of like to get out.
I just imagine you have, you know, being in front of a camera, a greater degree of exposure than someone holding a notebook and writing in it.
Now, I shoot a lot of my own stuff, and if there's going to be trouble, typically the guy who gets it is the photographer. You know, that's where people are going to zero in on. They're not going to zero in on the reporter. He's just going to be another person standing there.
And Bob, is there anything else you want to say about this situation?
Well, certainly our thoughts and prayers go out to the folks that lost people down there in Roanoke, and that was a terrible thing.
I just appreciate the risk that you and other journalists take every day. You know, that's a key role in an open and democratic society, so thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Bob, and thank you, Bob, for coming here.
Well, thank you for having me on.
It's Bob Aaron of WCHF's TV, longtime reporter, talking with us about what reporters face out there every day here on the front porch. I'm Scott Finn. I'm joined by Rick Wilson and Lori Lynn. Thanks for listening.